Welcome to Bandit's Keep. I'm Daniel. So this week, kind of spontaneously, I had something else I was going to talk about that was related directly to Unchained, as most of these podcasts seem to be of late. I think maybe if I just keep talking about it, I won't actually have to do the work, maybe. But anyways, on the Discord this morning, somebody had posted this little meme thing, and I noticed that one of the little things on it was like a suggestion. I don't know, it was like a joke. It said like, Tomb of Horrors is a great starting adventure. And I thought to myself, that's actually not untrue. If you're talking about starting a new group into role-playing. Now, I'm not going to do a lot of spoilers on Tomb of Horrors. It's been a while since I've looked through it. And basically, I wouldn't be able to give specifics anyways, but maybe light spoilers to get some themes. But it shouldn't be too bad. If you have never played and you don't want to know about Tomb of Horrors, then that's what most of this is going to be about. I do have one call from Riley, so maybe I should do that first. So actually, before I jump into this, let me do Riley's call. That way, if you have no interest in Tomb of Horrors, you can listen to Riley's call, and then I'll talk to you, I guess, next week. But let's listen to Riley.
Hey, Daniel. Riley here. I just finished listening to your latest podcast and realized my comment about Bloodied in 5e was wrong. I listened to it and I thought, hang on. Am I actually right? So I checked. It is in the rules as an optional rule in the DMG. I think I was just misremembering some discourse from a few years ago. I think my point still has some weight. It's fairly rare for people to have read the DMG and all the optional rules, but for whatever reason, it's quite commonly used. So it's somehow spread as a common optional rule that gets applied. You know, no one's, not too many tables are using the gritty realism healing rules, and yet Bloodied and flanking seem to get a lot of use. Your follow-up thoughts on Bloodied sound good. I don't have much to add, but it'll be interesting to hear how they playtest if you do. And I forgot to call in on your previous episode on subtle spells. At least I think I forgot. Hopefully I'm not repeating myself. I think it's definitely something you should look to include for the reasons you mentioned. It's a situation that is going to come up a lot and players will want to do it. So it's nice to have that question already answered, and it's awesome. I'm imagining a scene of a ruler in a crowded court. It's loud, everyone's moving about, but there's one character just standing still, muttering to themselves, eyes locked. I like where you're going with the material components as well. Most of the time I feel like they're fairly boring, but adding a significant one-time cost to some spells or to upcast them sounds really good. I also think you could reserve it for like ritual type magic, stuff that's not in the book, but what you might find in a product like the Book of Gob. Lastly, on the zine thing, I don't think it'd be fair if I didn't put my hand up. I threw you under the bus to potentially organize it, so you can count me in. I have some logistical questions, though, to do with shipping or mailing things. Firstly, the costs for international mailing. At least from what I can tell, it's quite expensive. It seems to be like $10 per letter to get to the US from Australia. Might then be easier, depending on how geographically diverse the participants are, to have some people volunteer to print and send other people's entries. You know, someone, you know, you just pay them the cost of shipping instead. And secondly, we might suffer from having to share addresses with a large group of people on the internet. You know, I don't care too much about that, but you know, that's a valid concern. I don't really know how to solve it though, without someone taking on a really large job of printing and sending everyone's out. But it's a problem worth thinking about. And I almost forgot your actual question. Trolls and magic swords. I think I like the ruling. Having Sword of Troll Slaying let you basically automatically defeat them is pretty awesome. Though, it certainly raises the power of the item quite a lot. I feel like you might need to reduce the frequency which those types of weapons drop, or make them like a one-time use sort of thing. Once you kill a true troll, it just reverts to a regular plus one or something, or whatever. I think they're normally plus one, plus three. But yeah, keep up the shows, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks, Riley. Riley has the Diegetic Advancement podcast. I will put a link in the notes below. Let's see if I can hit on all those things. As to the sword, well, we played, and it worked well. It was an auto-hit, basically, auto-kill, and they actually made pretty quick work of the trolls using good strategy and a confusion spell, and weirdly, a fireball that wasn't that effective. So it's interesting to see how different types of attacks and, you know, can still not just be one and done because bad rolls. So yeah, the idea that an OD&D, a save versus spell, it makes it completely you know, doesn't do anything, which I think somebody once called in and said that I wasn't correct to say that. But as I read the rules, when you save versus a spell, you take no damage. However, when you save versus wands and staves, you take half damage and Dragon's Breath as well. So it's really interesting, although I don't do Dragon's Breath that way. So it's interesting because two of three trolls, when they threw the fireball, made the save. So like no damage at all. And it's just really interesting to see how that fireball is not necessarily the end all be all. And spells that have no save become even more powerful. So I like the idea of it only being able to be used once, or maybe even I was thinking about against a very specifically named troll. But I think I would only do that if I really made the trolls more powerful. Because as it stands, so first of all, they got this troll killing sword like well over a year ago in actual time, which would be a bit longer in game time, especially now that we jumped forward a bit. So they've fought this. This is the first time they fought trolls since. So I don't think it happens often enough to make a difference. And this is one of the few weapons, I think, where it will really matter, because, again, the idea that it doubles its bonus to hit for the trolls, whereas like a dragon slaying sword, you know, it doesn't do that. You still get the plus the extra damage. But so I don't know. I don't know if I would make it, but I like that idea. Yeah. The subtle spells, yes, I think I definitely want to do it. And funny, what I was going to podcast about today was I was making notes on my I think I want to start the magic user class. I got to actually buckle down and do this. So, and I was thinking of dividing the spells up into different types of spells, your more advanced or standard type spells, and then a ritual type spell, and having some kind of cost slash material components for those ritual spells. And of course, you would only start with X number of spells and you can decide. I think it's Ghastly Affairs does a similar thing where there's different types of spells. So you can learn like a spell that you can put in an object. You can learn a spell that's a ritual, or you can learn like an instant cast spell. And in that game, a lot of the spells, actually, you can get the same spell in three different ways if you want. And they have different effects depending on how you cast it. I don't think I'll do that. I think I'll take the spells that have like a very fixed effect, like read magic, and make those rituals, right? They'll just cost gold and time. It's not something you're going to want to do in the middle of a dungeon necessarily, because you'll have to carry the spell book with you, which is something I want to lean into, I think, in the actual text of my game, that kind of more Holmesian, where spell books are very valuable. And yeah, if you take it with you on an adventure, there's a chance it might get destroyed, right? I don't know exactly how I'm going to do that, but maybe just putting that in there in the meta text might be enough to say, oh yeah, when you're traveling, which does, though, make an assumption that the player characters have someplace safe to keep their spell books when they're not using them. So again, that's a thing. So I've been talking a little bit with Joe from Decahedron via email about this. You know, they're suggesting something where there's like a hub, you know, like a single person that puts everything together. I don't necessarily think that's a bad idea, and doing it more like a zine. I don't know. I think in my original thought, I loved the idea of getting a bunch of letters randomly throughout the month. But I do also know that that could be a bit of a pain. So that might end up being the solution, which probably wouldn't be as big of a deal for the shipping, because it'd be one thing. But your idea of breaking it up regionally might be good. Yeah, I don't think we're going to be able to get past the idea of, if you want to be part of this, you're going to want to share your address. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. People did it all the time back in the past. I don't really think it's that big of a deal, but maybe it is. If you know, somebody's going to fly out and show up at your house. I don't know that I really would have a good vetting process. So if people feel uncomfortable with it, then yeah, obviously that would be a thing. Yeah. And of course, there's going to be the option where we are going to make it available for sure to people that don't participate in the physical copy. So if you are somewhere far away and it would just be a nightmare for the shipping, obviously you can still participate and just do it digitally. If you don't want to do the physical part of it, it sounds like maybe you do. And I mean, I don't know. I feel like once a month, it might be worthwhile to send something off to Australia. It might be fun to send it out to you. Anyways, we'll figure that out. I'm kind of, I've got a few people interested at this moment. All of them at this point, podcasters, I think, because I only mentioned it on the podcast. I still have not mentioned it anywhere else. So generally this podcast is listened to, I think, by a lot of podcasters. So they're the first ones to jump in. But if anybody else is listening and didn't catch the last episode or doesn't know what's going on, I want to start some kind of like everybody contributes one or two page project and then mails them to each other once a month, kind of. Maybe it is better to be like an actual combined zine where everybody sends a PDF or whatever kind of file to a central hub, which I guess would be me, where I can easily combine them into a single PDF, print them out and then mail them to everybody, or combine it into a single PDF and then email it to everybody, who can then mail to people in their local regions if, you know, if there's like a regional thing. Like I know from here to Canada, here being the US to Canada is also fairly expensive to send mail. So perhaps if there's a Canadian that wants to take part or multiple people, it might be worthwhile to do a Canadian hub of the zine, if we will. I think that Merck had sent me a message saying, I think he said spleen also rhymes with zine. So we're still working on a name. I don't know, spleen zine might be a little weird. We'll figure out a name at some point. But I think I answered all the questions or covered all the topics you talked about. A lot of stuff there. And if I didn't, I guess then I'll try to do it next time. In any case, let me jump back to the main topic of the podcast, which is going to be the kind of the Tomb Horrors as a first level adventure and or a starting adventure, we'll call it. And so if you don't want spoilers for Tomb Horrors, then, you know, I'll talk to you next week. So for those who don't know, Tomb Horrors is a pretty famous module. Some people claim it's the worst module ever written. Some people claim it's the best. Effectively, it's a high level module that Gary Gygax wrote. And it's kind of a challenge module. Like, it pretty much says right in it that if you're not playing with a group that wants to be like intellectually challenged, they're not going to enjoy this. They'll hate it. This is not a walk in, kick down the doors, fight things module. It's a thinking module. And I agree with that. Now, what's interesting about it is a high level module. But there is very, and again, this is, I guess, somewhat spoiled. There is very little combat that you have to take part in. So you can avoid most all combat. And there are some traps and things like that. I mean, there's lots of traps. But most of them are not the kind that are dealing like crazy amounts of damage. They're basically like whittling you down and making you use resources. It's a resource drain type of dungeon. And the idea is that this lich, demi-lich as it would be, has this great treasure hidden in this Tomb of Horrors that you have to basically uncover. Now, I say this, but there is some early on traps that could completely TPK the party. But anyways, and I think that the reason why this is good and why I think this is two reasons. So I've had two examples or two situations where I played through the Tomb of Horrors. So the first one was years ago. This has got to be like 2013, maybe. It's pre me getting back into playing. At some point early on, kind of like just as before 5e hadn't come out yet, I went to this convention. It was kind of like a general geek convention, and it wasn't an RPG convention. It wasn't a comic book convention. It wasn't a collectibles, but it was a mix of things, board games and stuff like that. And I saw listed as one of the things you could do was play the classic Tomb of Horrors. You know, this classic module everybody knows about, blah, 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 and we're going to run this. And I had no idea what it was because when I was a kid, we didn't really play modules that much. I think I've talked about this before. I had a handful. I had like B4, B3. So B4 being the Palace of Silver Princess, B3 being Lost City, which is one of my favorite modules of all time. I had to keep on the Borderlands, obviously. I had, because that comes with a basic set, I had Lost Isle, oh my God. You know what I'm talking about, the expert adventure, Isle of Dread. And I had White Plume Mountain, which is one of my favorite modules ever. So that's more or less all the modules I had. I think I had one of the two of the ones that are like solo ones. There was like one that you like put like invisible ink modules. I don't know if anybody had any of those. And of course I had game books, and then I had modules for other systems like Top Secret and Star Frontiers and stuff. But I didn't really have a lot of D&D modules. We just made up our own adventures. So I had never heard of Tomb of Horrors. And I said, sure, I'll play. And we started playing. I got this magic user. He was like a 12th level magic user with like 14 hit points. It was like hilarious. And this is AD&D, of course. And we're playing, and effectively somebody played a thief. And that thief, of course, did the thief thing right at the beginning, right? They ran forward, I'll check for traps, I'll do this. And they got hit by a couple of traps. Nothing that killed them or whatever. But at that point, the player, which is really weird to me, but now looking back at it, was like, I refuse. My character refuses to go forward first because they're getting hurt and no way, somebody else do it. And everybody else was like staring at each other like, well, that's what the thief does. Of course, I didn't have that mindset because I hadn't played since I was a kid. And I was just like, all right, I'm a magic user. And I think I had a 10-foot pole. And I was like, all right, so this is what I'm going to do. And I just started explaining because I didn't have a find traps ability really, right? Like I didn't have the character sheet that said trying to. And I just started explaining the stuff I was doing. And some of the things, which again, I'm not going to give away, some of the hidden things, some of the puzzles that really do require that you actually can't even make a roll for. I don't even think you really could make a roll for it. You have to figure it out yourself. I was able to figure out because I wasn't relying on the idea that, you know, I had to make this roll. Like I'm gonna walk over here and check for traps. It was like I'm doing a thing. I'm tapping my 10-foot pole. At one point, I cast a levitation spell because we'd found a pit trap. And I was like, well, I'm going to levitate to the roof and use my hands. I'm going to walk hand over hand. And I'm just going to lower myself down and try to like trigger like every, you know, 10 feet and try to like trigger trap doors because I'm going to fall. I'm levitating, right? I can push down. And we basically cleared a bunch of traps that way. I figured out where some secret entrances were. And we got through and there was like, of course, now I've played the module. So I know there was a couple things where we kind of messed up. And we got pretty far. And then we ran out of time. So we basically didn't get to the end. What was really fun about it was that because that player like played the thief in that way and was like, I'm not going to go forward anymore. We as a group, well, me really, was forced to like do it in a way almost like the OD&D way where there's no thief, there's no skills for that. How do you look for the trap? Kind of as Matt Finch talks about in the primer where it's like I pour water on the ground, I tap over here, I blow dust across this, I roll a marble. Like these are the things that I was trying to do because we didn't have another way to do it that I could think of. And of course I had some spells and stuff and we had magic items. And it was really fun. And I just think to myself, this would be really good for a new party. You'd have to tone it down a bit because I think a first level party would probably die because again, while the traps aren't super deadly for a high level group, I think for a low level group, they wouldn't make the saves and stuff. But the idea of the Tomb of Horror, the idea that like you're coming into this place and you have to almost forget like that there is skills and stuff and just use your ability to imagine and have your characters do things. And I said I had a second experience with it, which is I did. I played in it in the fifth edition version and we played high level characters. And because I told Andy Goodman ran it and I told him, I said, I remember kind of the first little part, so I just won't say anything. Like, I'll just kind of lay back. If somebody wants one of my skills, I'll do it. But I'm not going to actually volunteer any information until we get to a point where, like, I don't remember anything anymore. And it didn't take long before because I don't have a great memory for that kind of stuff. I think a couple times once I didn't remember anything, then I came to a certain space where I did remember something, I just shut up again. Because I'm, you know, again, as players, we can do that. And what I found was, especially for the 5e characters, it was a cakewalk at that level. And when I finished it, I thought to myself, this would be a great adventure for skilled 5e players to play, but at first level, because their ability to do things would be greatly reduced. So it'd be more of a challenge, but they could still use the special abilities the characters have. So I don't know that I'd run it as a first level adventure for OD&D characters, because you would probably end up with it being effectively a funnel, as somebody kind of said on the Discord. But I think if you had brand new players and you gave them like fifth and sixth level characters, again, it's an OD&D character. It's not that hard to teach them basically, you know, this is your hit points. This is the weapons you have. These are the items you have. You could give somebody a fairly high level character and they would be able to work them decently in a system like that and walk through. Now, I wouldn't necessarily give somebody a high level, let's say AD&D character that's got more depth to it. Although I might. I mean, I don't know. But anyways, that's the way I look at it. I don't think of it as a funnel necessarily, but as a way to teach new people. And I've talked about this before. One of my favorite adventures for introducing new people to the hobby is Tower of the Stargazer, which is a Lamentations of the Flame Princess module. And what I love about that module is that, again, like Tomb of Horrors, there's not really a whole lot of combat that you have to encounter. It's basically a lot of searching, puzzles, figuring things out, investigating a cool location. And while it can be deadly, it's one of those modules where you really have to dig into. And I've had great success with brand new players just digging into it, because unlike a experienced player, if you take a brand new player and you go, okay, you open this door, this looks like it might be a bedroom, there's a bed, there's a nightstand, there's a bookshelf, there's a this, there's that. The first thing they're going to go is, well, I'm going to look under the bed. I'm going to pull some books out. They just do it, right? Because they don't know that there's skills for that or things around it. So there is this like freedom of a module like that. And instead of starting somebody at first level with their first adventure, never played before, with a dungeon where they're walking through fighting rats and teaching them effectively that this game is about kicking down doors and killing things, you could bring them in with a module that's a thinking module. So I think as much as there are a handful of modules out there that claim to be like, we teach you how to do the OSR way, I feel like a module that's like, if not it to it, the module itself, Tomb of Horrors, is to me a much better introduction to the classic style of play. The style of play where you as a player are thinking about what your character is going to do and giving that information to the Dungeon Master, who then interprets it and makes it work in the world or not work. And sometimes you roll dice. Anyways, I would love to know what you think about this general concept. If I didn't answer something that Riley asked, then maybe when I play this back to edit it, I'll tag it onto the end. But otherwise, we'll consider this the end. Check the Discord. Check the links in the description below. You'll find a link to my Discord if you want to send me a message over there. You can also email me. I believe my email's in there as well. You can do any number of things to send me a message. I always like hearing from people. Let me know what you think about this topic and about anything else that we've talked about in the past or that you think might be relevant to this podcast. And that's a really long outro. I'll talk to you soon.